He's the voice of the loyal opposition at City Hall and a thorn in Mayor Lenny Curry's side. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, whether it's the possible sale of JEA, the new Kids Hope Alliance, or allegations of being bullied by the mayor's team, one man has emerged as a feisty critic of the Curry administration. This morning, it's your chance to connect with District 9 City Councilman Garrett Dennis. What are your questions? Get on the line now, 549-2937. Then later, our Going Green today hears about the upcoming Great St. John's River Campout. Plus, he's the author of the much-loved Panshu Children's Book Series. He's even served as a stuntman for John Travolta. We'll talk with local actor and author Nick Loren. All of that and more ahead this hour. But first this morning, he has emerged as a feisty voice of opposition at Jacksonville City Hall. District 9 Councilman Garrett Dennis is becoming known around town as a vocal opponent of the Lenny Curry administration on a number of issues affecting the city, everything from a potential sale of the utility JEA to the leadership of the new child welfare agency, the Kids Hope Alliance, and more. So what's driving Dennis? How is this impacting city government? What are his future plans? So many questions. Right now, we're going to find out as we welcome, for the first time, District 9 City Councilman Garrett Dennis to Studio 5. Garrett Dennis, thanks for being on the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Here's our question to callers. What do you think of the divide at City Hall between the City Council, and in particular Councilman Dennis, and the Curry administration on a number of important issues, particularly whether or not to privatize JEA? Of course, that's the big talker right now. Give us a call right now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And we welcome your comments as well, as always, on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Garrett Dennis, you're a Democrat, District 9 councilman. You and a number of other Democrats, and even one Republican, the current president, Anna Brochet, have emerged as vocal opponents, it seems, to Mayor Curry on a number of issues, in particular this thorny question of whether to privatize JEA. Last night at the City Council, the body you sit on voted to strip the power to force JEA and administration officials to testify under oath to a special committee that was looking at privatizing the utility. So first off, before we get into all this other stuff, I want to ask you your thoughts on that decision by the council.
It was a very, it was a very sad decision last night, but I respect the body of the council. There are a few people, a few members on the city council that for some reason don't want to get to the truth. They're trying to.
Do you think the truth is being hidden?
I think so. And like I shared last night on the council that, you know, there's been several times where departments come before various, come before the committee and share information that's not true.
Like what?
Just different things. I can't think of anything in particular, but you know, just asking questions about things getting done in their district, timelines, and they change the conversation or may not give accurate information, and then you do a little research and you find out there's a situation now, thinking about it, about a week or two ago, where we were drilling down on some trust fund money and we were told there was only $49,000 in, and we started probing and had our auditors to look, and it's like a couple hundred thousand dollars. And so the committee went like, you know, why are you hiding the money? So it's just different things like that, you know.
Things like that you're saying have eroded trust and goodwill between the city council and the other side of City Hall, the mayor's office,
yeah,
his
absolutely.
Team. Yeah. Okay. And you've emerged as a vocal critic of Mayor Curry. You've gone up, you've butted heads with him on a number of issues, this most recent one being whether to privatize JEA. Now it looks as though the council's ability to bring people in, subpoena them to testify under oath, that's basically been voted,
taken away. Yeah.
So why, in your view, is it important to put people under oath? You think because you don't believe they'll be trustworthy, but why, in your view, is it a bad idea to privatize JEA? It seems as though you're against that.
I am. It's you know, our largest asset. We own it. If you look at, just in recent history with our hurricanes, where you have private companies throughout the state struggle to get their the power back on, because we own JEA. JEA made Jacksonville a priority. We were back online in days. There's a situation down in South Florida, the Tampa area, where a private company and the city went battle putting out LED lights throughout the city. Because we own JEA, we're installing LED lights throughout the city. If there's an issue, we could bring JEA before the council and, hold them accountable.
Right.
Private company, we can't.
And that's been the argument for keeping it as is. What about the argument that the city could benefit from this enormous windfall of billions of dollars that could then be used to fund a lot of other potential initiatives?
To be honest, I don't trust City Hall on with $1 billion, $2 billion, $3 billion. I'm just going to put it out there.
You don't think that's an accurate figure?
I don't. I mean, our auditors looked at it. $5 billion, I think one council member threw out there. It's just not there.
You think it'll be less money than that?
I think it'll be less money.
And we'll have to wait and see if it even comes to that. But let me ask you, too, does the council, are the votes there on the council to privatize this utility?
I don't think so. You need a supermajority. I don't think that the mayor can whip that many votes in.
Why not?
Because we're all hearing, every council member pretty much have said that no one has come to them and said that selling JEA is a great idea. All the comments, whether it's in the grocery store, at church, or dropping the kids off at school, everyone is talking about do not sell JEA.
And that's the feedback you're getting from your constituents. Okay.
Absolutely.
What about the whole concept of the carrot and the stick? From what we hear, you've been getting the stick. Other council people might get the carrot. If you go along with us on this, maybe, there's some other things that we can do that will benefit you and your district.
I think it's more of the stick and the stick. I think a lot of the council members, they've been getting the stick.
Like what? Like how?
I think at City Hall, I think that the atmosphere and the climate has been more of, if you don't do this, we're going to do this to you.
Like what? You've publicly accused the mayor of threatening you, and he denied, and his team has denied that.
Sure, of course. There.
Do you have any proof of these threats?
Of course. I mean, it's been in offices. Of course, there's not any recordings and things like that. But it's been comments from the mayor himself that if you don't do it, I'm going to make sure the spigot gets turned off and. In your districts. And so
the money spigot.
And so I represent my district. It's not about Garrett Dennis. It's about, my constituents. And so I don't take light to that. And in government, we have checks and balances. And so it's not being an opposition to the mayor. It's checks and balances.
You don't see this as a partisan thing. You're a Democrat. The mayor's a Republican. Are you opposing the mayor over ideological differences?
No. I mean, mayor and I, we walked hand in hand through Eureka Gardens, and, it's Democrat and Republican. I mean, we made some changes there. We went up to D.C., and Senator Rubio and Senator Nelson, they made sweeping changes to the HUD regulations. So it's not a Democrat or Republican. It's about right and wrong. It's about what's best for this community. I think that's where the dividing line has come.
There's another divide in terms of this newly formed agency, the Kids Hope Alliance. You made a speech last night where you said there's a cloud over the process to find a CEO for the organization. Why?
Well, you have a sitting board member, at the time, a sitting board member applying for the CEO's position.
Joe Peppers.
And our ethics officer came out and said, listen, it's nothing illegal, but it's unethical, and he needs to resign. And it took several weeks for him to come to that conclusion, to resign. But if you look at his resume compared to all the other resumes, he doesn't have the qualifications. He hasn't stayed on the job more than a year and a half. If you look at his resume, doesn't have any background dealing with children, but yet he's at the top of the list, you know.
So what do you call that?
A clouded process.
A clouded process.
Clouded process.
And after making those remarks, have you received any pushback on that or any questioning of you defining it that way?
No. So I sat through the Skype interviews, and one of the things that really gave me pause is when he basically said that, you know, the kids on the north side, you know, Rebaud and Raines, they have a low graduation rate, that students are only graduating at 30% and 40%, which is untrue, which is, you know, he's just perpetuating those stereotypes. And so that isn't someone...
Racist stereotypes?
Well, he's an African-American, but...
That doesn't mean that he couldn't... I mean, sure. Racism is institutional.
Sure.
We all are affected in one way or another.
Right. So I think he's, in my opinion, he's perpetuating those stereotypes.
Okay.
And Rebaud and Raines has an 80 and 90% graduation rate. And so he kind of went down that, you know, that line to bolster his interview. And I thought it was wrong. And I said last night that he needs to apologize and remove himself from you know, being considered as a CEO.
And that has not happened.
And that has not happened.
Okay. Are you going to run for mayor? Are you going to run for a higher office?
I'm going to run for re-election. I love serving my constituents in District 9. You know, you don't wake up one morning and say, "Hey, I'm going to run for mayor." It's a huge decision. It's a decision that that you can't take lightly. And today I'm going to, you know, run for re-election. It's, you know, in my district. And
are you being approached to consider a run for that office?
I think all 19 council members are approached every day about running for mayor. But what I will say is that, you know, if Mayor Curry is re-elected in next year, the sale of JEA is going to go away. I think that's his priority. And I think, you know, as long as he, you know, occupies the mayor's office, it's going to continue to be a push, you know, into his soul.
But you're saying that there will be a block of opposing votes on the council to stop that from going forward? Possibly.
Just listen to the colleagues on the dais at, you know, the various meetings. I don't see a supermajority selling JEA. I mean, again, you know, you use the example carrot and the stick. Could be a carrot and a stick. But if the vote was today, I mean, if you watched the council meeting last night, if the vote was last night, it would have failed.
All right, let's go to some calls now for City Councilman Garrett Dennis. What are your thoughts about all of these issues? 549-2937. Joshua in San Marco. Hi, Joshua.
Hey, good morning. Love the show, Melissa.
Thanks.
I'm a big, I'm in support of your guests, and I don't want to speak directly about JEA, but I do want to speak to the mayor's Twitter account. And I think by looking at what's on his Twitter feed, anyone, any of us, any voter can tell what his priorities are. Just for one example, and then I'll let you go, and I'll listen again on off the phone here, but I looked to see what the mayor would say about March for Our Lives. I thought he would weigh in at least to say, "Hey, thanks for showing up, kids," or "I might not completely have your back, but I noticed what you did." And I looked at his Twitter feed, and I saw that about the time that march was finishing, he was preparing to watch a replay of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And so I think that's where he is. He loves the Jaguars. And thank you.
Well,
Mayor
why
Curry
is that a bad thing, Joshua? Why is that a bad thing?
It's not a bad thing, but he's the mayor of all of us. So if 5,000 of us show up for March for Our Lives, I think there should be a comment from our leader, either a right down the middle comment of, "Hey, here, March for Your Lives happened this Saturday at Hemming Park." And And, you know, that's it. It doesn't have to be I support it, but I think it should be acknowledged.
Okay.
Just like the Jaguars, you know, another neutral issue. All right. Thank
you. Gotcha. Okay. Thanks for that. And by the way, as has been the case since we started this program in 2009, just want to point out to all our listeners that Mayor Curry has an open invitation to appear on this program. That's one we extended to a couple of his predecessors as well. All right. What about his comment, Joshua's comment?
Well, when I came in earlier today, you asked if I had a Twitter account, and I don't. And I said all the time that I'm going to get a Twitter account, but I don't have one. You know, I do think there's some missed opportunities that the mayor could weigh in and, you know, and give his support on issues. And there's some things that he's silent on. But again, I mean, we all have different motivations on why we speak out on different things. And so,
do you think that's holding him to an unfair standard that he should weigh in on every divisive issue?
Well, you know, I can name a few issues where, you know, where he has said that I'm the leader, you know, I'm going to lead the city. I'm going to lead, on the major issues. And, you know, there are some issues that he hasn't, you know, he hasn't weighed on, you know, on an issue, Walking While Black. He hasn't weighed in on issues of bullying at City Hall.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because you've accused the mayor's team of bullying you, like holding a town hall in your district, not inviting you, things like that. You've accused them of threatening to turn off the spigot to your district if they don't go along with their agenda. Bullying at City Hall, are you talking about you being bullied? Or are you saying there's a climate of bullying? What do you mean by that?
Both. There's a climate and personally. But I think because of my stance lately, the bullying doesn't happen that often. And, you know, I was always told if there's a bully on the playground and he's bullying everybody on the playground, it only takes one person, you know, to stand up to that bully, to show everyone else that the bully isn't all that big and bad. Just stand up to that bully.
You that guy? Is that how you see yourself?
Well, I've taken a stand, and I know that I'm not being bullied anymore at City Hall.
Jim is in Riverside. Jim, you're on the radio.
Yes. Thank you. And first of all, Councilman Dennis, I appreciate you very much. And I don't think you're just feisty. I think you're a very serious councilman who's committed to serving the whole city. And I wanted to ask, how has the mayor's office behavior changed since they have discovered that there's an organized opposition to their steamrolling agenda, both on the council and wider and wider among the people who come to these council meetings? And if it has changed, how?
Well, that's interesting. So, I'll just be honest and frank. I'm a transparent guy. You know, the first couple years, there was a honeymoon. And I think that the council, we kind of lost our way as it relates to being a check and balance to the administration. And in the early days, the administration didn't have too many of their people at council meetings. And now you see the full staff at council meetings. In the back of my mind, especially last night, and I looked into the audience and I saw all the top lieutenants from the administration sitting on the first and second row. And my mind went, you know, is this a night of staring council members down with that intimidating look? I think they've stepped up their tactics of getting things done. But again,
Wait, let me just jump in. Tactics of getting things done. By tactics, what do you mean? Just being more engaged with the process, coming to the meetings,
being more engaged. There are subliminal tactics. It's a full contact sport. It's not for the faint at heart, and so it's picked up, and you can kind of tell the tone is picked up. That it's a little different.
But you think that's as it should be. It sounds as though you're saying you think there needs to be this back and forth, this almost blood sport between these two co-equal branches of government. Although we do have a strong mayor form of government, like a lot of big cities.
Right. We do have a strong mayor government, but again, the legislative branch, we set policy, and the executive branch carries out the policy. And there was no line of difference in the past couple of years, and that now that line is being drawn where there is a difference. And so it's not just a Democrat Republican opposition; it's a city council saying, "Hey, listen, you know, we're not going to rubber stamp every initiative." And if you look at the Kids Hope Alliance, when the mayor first came out with the Kids Hope Alliance, His initial bill was a disaster. We had to actually clean it up.
What was wrong with it?
It basically stripped away all the power of the
Jacksonville Children's Commission.
Children's Commission and the independent board,
which no longer exists,
and made into basically an arm of the administration. And so we had to amend it, fix it to make it again an independent organization.
Okay. And again, obviously the mayor's office would probably disagree with that. But let's go now to Ben on the south side. Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, I just wanted to, fact check some of the stuff that's been said on this program a couple times. I've read the city council audit report on the sale of JEA a few times now. I would encourage all your listeners to go out and do that. Because of the wonderful Florida sunshine laws, you have access to all the information that's being used to make these decisions. So, Councilman Dennis there on the phone said that he didn't believe the quote unquote billions of dollars numbers. The city council auditor's audit gave a minimum range of $1.7 billion for revenue or net proceeds to the city and $5.2 billion at the maximum range. So it is important to make sure that we're all talking about the same numbers here, because a windfall of anywhere between $1.7 and $5.2 billion would be a massive windfall for the city. Looking at Councilman Gulliford's proposals around what some of that money could be used for is very interesting, talking about paying off the city pension fund deficits, paying off the Better Jacks debt, paying off the general revenue debt. Those would all have massive benefits to the city from a debt service standpoint. We made number one on the Bloomberg list of cities suffering under high fixed costs. 32.1% of the city's revenue right now is going towards debt service. I think it's important to think about both sides of the issue. I don't know if I'm for or against it, but it's still really interesting to think about what the possibilities are. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that. Councilman Dennis.
So I don't disagree with the caller. I mean, I do think that, that we're going through the process and we're looking at, the value. I don't think that's a bad idea. But I don't think
And let me ask, what if the valuation is really high? Do you think that more votes might come around?
I don't know what, I can't get into the minds of each council member. But I do tell you, if I came into a windfall of a few billion dollars, if I had a rich uncle that passed away and left me a few billion dollars and I wanted to invest the billion dollars somewhere so I can continue to generate more money, where would you put it?
And that's the question that everyone will have, of course, if it comes to that. How will the money be spent?
Well, I know where I would put the money. I know where I would invest money if I had a couple billion dollars. I would probably invest it into a public utility. I wouldn't put it in the stock market. I wouldn't just go out and buy a brand new car and a brand new house and nice shiny stuff, I would put in a public utility and get residual, what we're doing now. But, you know,
you're talking about the $116 million a year that the utility puts into the city's coffers.
And
you think that's a better bet in the long run than getting a big lump sum, which would result from a sale?
And it's actually a little more than that when you start looking at the franchise fee and other fees and things that we collect. It's around $240 million. But we do get we do receive $116 million in the general fund, but there are also some other dollars that flows to the city from JEA.
Okay. Lots of emails and tweets for Councilman Garrett Dennis. Mark at Mayport Naval Station writes, right on, JEA provides funds to bail us out with the police firefighters pension crisis, provided funds. Your guest is right, we don't want to sell JEA. A tweet from Chris, where has Councilman Dennis received the most pushback from? Businesses, citizens, or government officials?
Not citizens, not businesses. Probably the other side of the fourth floor at City Hall. That's where the biggest opposition. Quite frankly, Ray Charles can see, you know, who's behind selling JEA.
Who?
The administration is definitely the mayor's priority.
And that's something that he has denied officially, saying he just wants to explore this.
Sure.
You don't buy that?
I don't buy it.
All right.
Like I said, Ray Charles can see it.
Councilman Garrett Dennis, thanks for being on the program.
Thank you for having me.
We appreciate your time. And by the way, I've had questions about this. This platform is open to all elected officials in this community. When they ask, we put them on. So thanks for coming, Councilman. Much more still ahead, meanwhile, later. It's our Women with Heart series featuring Dr. Estralita Redmond. But up next, a chance to get back to nature with the great St. John's River Campout. We'll tell you about that, too, right after this.
Follow what's happening at WJCT even when you're away from your radio. Get the latest news, event updates, and see what happens behind the scenes. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
You've seen him on the PBS NewsHour with Judy Woodruff. Now join news anchor Hari Srinivasan for an in-depth discussion Thursday, April 19th at the WJCT studios. VIP reception at 6 with a discussion at 7:30. Tickets for the event are $25. To purchase tickets and for more information, go to wjct.org/events.
Here's how to be a good contestant on Ask Me Another, NPR's hour of puzzles, word games, and trivia. Tip one, if you don't know the answer, guess.
Driving Michael Phelps.
Could I say right now that I would totally watch the TV show Driving Michael Phelps?
Remember what show you're on.
That is correct. We're not on Jeopardy, but you're right.
Tune in and shout out answers every week on Ask Me Another.
Saturdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Electro Lounge is now on Spotify. On the road or at home, take us wherever you go. Just search WJCT 89.9 on Spotify, where the Electro Lounge is always on.
This Going Green segment is made possible by A1A Solar.
Welcome back. Well, it is your chance to explore the natural beauty of the St. John's River. St. John's Riverkeeper and partners are creating a three-day adventure. It's the Great St. John's River Campout, and it's coming up in a few weeks. You can camp, hike, go birding, paddling, take a sunset boat trip, and much more. It's our Going Green today on the show as we welcome Advocacy Director Shannon Blankenship and Outreach Director Kelly Patton, both with the Riverkeeper. Ladies, how are you?
Good. Doing great.
Good to talk to you, Shannon. Okay, this is coming up the weekend of Friday, April 20th through Sunday, April 22nd. A three-day adventure. People can go for all 3 days or just one. Lots on the agenda, though. How'd this all come about?
So one of the best parts of working for St. John's Riverkeeper is getting to explore unique, exciting places along the St. John's. And the campout came about because this is one of those places. This is St. Francis, which is a ghost town of the St. John's River.
A ghost town?
Yeah. So
Where is it?
So St. Francis is located just outside of DeLand. It's in the heart of the Ocala National Forest along the St. John's River. It's a town that was active during the steamboat era of the St. John's, but is no longer a community. And in fact, you can only see relics of the town remaining if you hike the St. Francis Trail.
Huh. So that'll be a highlight of this trip.
Yes. So bringing people to one of these, again, unique, excellent places to explore along the St. John's, you get to see the remains of the town. You get to see Hidden Spring. You're hiking in the National Forest. We've got all kinds of places to explore nearby and all kinds of unique ways that people can interact with the St. John's.
Okay. So Kelly Patton, that's one example of what people will get to do. But people could come for 3 days of all kinds of other stuff, or they can just come for a little bit. What all can people be doing if they come out to this adventure?
Well, I think that's what makes it so appealing. I'm actually a newcomer to the Jacksonville area, and like Shannon was saying, the river here is really different from the river that we're seeing just across the street here. It's a lot less tidal. It's slow moving. There's a lot of really interesting narrow creeks that you can explore on your own. And I think what's so interesting about this weekend is that you can really make it whatever you want. So there are events that you can register for, like the Sunset Cruise boat trip with Blue River Heron Tours. We also have a really interesting advocacy training that Shannon has done a lot of work to prepare with our riverkeeper. And that really gets at the heart of our mission.
Advocacy training for the public.
For the public, yeah. So this is a three-day event over Earth Day weekend. And we realize at St. John's Riverkeeper, being a voice for the St. John's, that what we need are an army of advocates. So getting people out on the river to explore the river is critical to that, but also giving them some training, some education for how to engage with our legislative leaders about how to advocate for the places that we want to protect and preserve at the St. John's is key. So we have St. John's Riverkeeper Lisa Reinemann that's going to be there giving some tips to engaging with our elected leaders. We also have Clay Henderson of Stetson University Environmental Resilience Program and Sandra Gray, local Volusia Water Alliance leader. All of them are going to be talking about ways that they have actively engaged with their community to change things for the better. So advocacy training, and then again, combined with hiking and boat trips and ways to explore. And all of this, we decided to make a camp out because if you want to travel to experience any of this, I don't want the issue or the reason that you don't come to fall on, well, we need a place to sleep. So if you want to just hang out all night, we'll have campfire stories talking about St. Francis, the ghost town. We'll have a barbecue dinner and live music and lots of other ways to right here on a campground in the heart of the Ocala National Forest, connected to all these excellent trails and springs and everything. We'll have ways that people can interact with us, with the river, and have a great time.
This is all to promote your goal and your mission always to preserve the environmental health of this waterway.
Absolutely. St. John's Riverkeeper is a voice for the St. John's River, providing a voice for the entire 310 miles. And Lisa Reinemann, as the St. John's Riverkeeper, has the mission and the objective to make sure that we are getting as many people engaged on the river as possible so that when we need that army of advocates to step up and contact their elected leaders or contact other decision makers to either promote positive policies that will help the health of the St. John's or to defend against potential threats for the
like
St.
dredging it,
like dredging,
which is going forward.
It
seems to be
not only dredging the St. John's. That's been one of the issues that St. John's Riverkeeper has been active on for the last 4 years, but also increase consumptive use permits for water supply planning and more growth, especially in the Central Florida area. These are issues that are critical to the health of this river. And if we don't get more people on the river, exploring, engaging, seeing those springs and interacting, then we're not going to be able to have that large voice that we need when we have to say no to this or yes to this.
Okay. So with all of that said, Kelly Patton, how can people register to be part of this? And it's, as she said, as Shannon said, this is over Earth Day weekend. Good timing.
Yeah, it's a big weekend. A lot of things happening all across the state, but it's really easy to register. I think the easiest way is to go directly to our website, stjohnsriverkeeper.org, and you can register online there to camp. If you're a member already, it's only $5 to camp. And then a slightly higher fee if you're not already a member with us. And you can also just register for Saturday. I think that's when we have the biggest lineup of events. And you can just come on the Sunset Boat Cruise tour with us or join us for the dinner. And you can also, if you want to just do self-guided things on your own while you're there and then hop on a few events, you can do that as well. So go online. You can also call us and have, you know, ask any questions about the event.
stjohnsriverkeeper.org is the site. Shannon Blankenship, Kelly Patton, both with the Riverkeeper. Thanks for being with us. Have fun out there.
Thank you so much. We will.
Later in the hour, actor and author Nick Loren. But up next, it's the March Woman with Heart. We'll meet her in a moment.
Hey, Robert, you know what I love about your show, Planet Money?
What?
Planet Money, on the surface, is a show about economics, but really it's a show about how the world works.
And Guy Raz, what I love about How I Built This is that it's about entrepreneurs, but it's really about people who have dreams, who face crisis and loss and success.
Well, now you can hear
Planet Money
and How I Built This together in 1 hour, and I'm pretty sure this is going to blow your mind.
Or crack it open a bit.
Sunday at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
For the next jazz night in America, Canada plus Cuba equals Jane Burnett and Makeke.
It translates to the fiery energy spirit of a little girl.
The all-women band at Jazz Lincoln Center and in Little Havana, Miami.
It feels like home, like it's the music, the people, the parts of the country that you really miss.
That's on the next jazz night in America. I'm Christian McBride.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
When it comes to fighting crime, many police have a simple goal.
We would love to take guns off of the street. That's what we'd like to do.
So why are they selling their guns to the public?
It doesn't make sense. They're doing something counter to what they're saying they want to do today. Hypocrisy.
On the next Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Saturday at 3 on 89.9 WJZT, your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, it's a year-long celebration recognizing outstanding women leaders in this community, a different woman every month, and all in the service of Volunteers in Medicine. That's the free downtown clinic providing health care to hundreds of working people in this community who are uninsured. All year long, Women with Heart, as they're known, will take turns each month wearing a stunning heart-shaped diamond necklace from Beard's Jewelry to raise awareness about the organization. Dr. Estralita Redman, president of St. Vincent's Medical Group, is wearing the necklace right now because she's the March Woman with Heart for Volunteers in Medicine. She's sporting the Heart of Jacksonville necklace as we speak and joins us right now in Studio 5. Doctor, good morning.
Good morning.
And that is one nice piece of ice you got on there.
Well, thank you. I've gotten compliments.
Sure. And that's the whole point of this. So all month long, you wear the Heart of Jacksonville necklace to raise awareness about women with heart. Full disclosure, I'll be doing that for the month of December. This is a way, though, to really spread the word about this free clinic that provides medical services to uninsured people. As a physician and the president of St. Vincent's Medical Group, I think you have a better understanding than most of why this is so important. What attracted you to the mission of Volunteers in Medicine?
Well, what attracted me is that the Volunteers in Medicine provides medical care to the working uninsured. And so many times that's a population that is forgotten. So they're working, but they aren't able to afford health care insurance, or it's just not available to them. And so I think the mission that Volunteers in Medicine has is somewhat a little bit different than what we see in some of the other health centers.
And what is it about the model that you think is working better for people? It's all volunteers like you, doctors mainly, coming in and volunteering their services.
Right, exactly. I think there are a couple of things. One is that the clinic not only provides primary care, but they also have specialists that come into the center and actually provide care. And I think that's the one big piece that really distinguishes Volunteers in Medicine from what we typically would see for the uninsured.
Tell me a little bit about what you're doing at St. Vincent's. You're managing a lot of stuff at a wonderful hospital that really gives you a deep understanding of these issues.
Right. So St. Vincent's, one of the aspects that's really critical to our mission is providing care to the poor and vulnerable. So to those persons that are struggling the most, that's the core of our mission. And so in order to do that, and really for all persons, we look at how can we give care across the continuum? And with that, we obviously focus on transitions of care. And what we found is that patients who are uninsured have trouble. They have trouble when they're admitted to the hospital, and then when they're discharged, where do they go for care? So one of the unique things that we've done is that we set up a transitional care clinic that actually sees patients after they've been discharged who don't have a primary care physician, and also patients that are seen in the ED that require follow-up. One of the things that's important about that is if you don't have a setting like Volunteers in Medicine or our transitional care clinic, then those patients fall through the gap. Mm-hmm. One of the other things this transitional care clinic does is that within 90 days, the goal is to transition those patients to a primary care physician or a patient-centered medical home, which is how we relate to Volunteers in Medicine. They're actually one of our partners in this process.
I see. And, of course, you as the March Woman with Heart, sporting this gorgeous $7,000 diamond heart-shaped pendant all around town. It's cool to see it on you, the Heart of Jacksonville, as it's known. It will be raffled off, by the way, next February. You can go to vim-jax.org to register for a chance to win for only $100, by the way, per ticket. But what's it like, doctor, to wear this necklace every day?
Oh, it's really great. It's such a beautiful necklace, and obviously people ask about it, and so it's given me many opportunities to talk about Volunteers in Medicine and the health care that it provides for the community. So I think in December you will find it exciting to wear the necklace.
I'm a little nervous.
don't be nervous. It will stay on. You will not lose it.
Well, that's my fear, or scratching it. I've heard it's got a tiny clasp, so I might need a little help every day putting it on.
You will need some assistance, yes.
Yeah, you found that to be the case.
Okay. Yes, it's good that I have a spouse.
And so last but not least, are you planning any sort of event to spread the word about Volunteers in Medicine?
So for the month of March, I actually partnered with a couple of people within St. Vincent's, and a GI continuing medical education event was sponsored.
Okay. And already happened then.
It's already happened, right.
But people can go online to vim-jax.org to learn more about Dr. Redmond and all the women with heart, and register to win the Heart of Jacksonville necklace, too. So, Dr. Redmond, you're looking good.
Thank you.
I love that look on you with that stunning ice. And thank you so much for being here this morning.
Thank you for having me.
A quick break, and in a moment, actor, author, producer, and even Travolta stuntman Nick Loren has a new project. It's his new book. That's after this.
Wayne Hogan of the Tara Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. Distracted driving is deadly, and it's not just teen drivers. Adults do it too, and there are millions more adults than teens. Arrive alive. Stop distracted driving. More at waynehogan.law.
The census matters. Those who get left out risk losing public and private resources. For the first time in more than a half century, the census will include a question about citizenship. Officials say it's necessary. California's Attorney General says it's illegal. Who counts in the census? And who's doing the counting? Next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
In India, President Trump has a decade's worth of business allies.
I am a big fan of Hindu and I am a big fan of India. Big, big fan.
But could his relationships and development projects cause trouble in the White House? That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, being a teenage girl worried about pimples, boys, and the possibility of being deported, Sara Saidi was 2 when her family fled Iran and came to California where they had relatives. When their visitors' visas expired, they stayed, living here illegally for years. Saidi's now a citizen and has written a memoir. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Electro Lounge is now on Spotify. On the road or at home, take us wherever you go. Just search WJCT 89.9 on Spotify, where the Electro Lounge is always on.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, you know him from his many appearances on TV, in movies, and even from his work as a stuntman and stand-in for star John Travolta. Now, actor, producer, and author Nick Loren is out with his newest book in the much-loved Pan Shu children's book series, and he's on the line with more. Hey, Nick, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you, Melissa?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks so much for giving us a few minutes. You've had a lot of success with
this.
Yeah, well, you've had a lot of success with this book series, and you're out with a new book. It's for kids. It's called Far Ful Fulong from Oolong. Pan Shu learns ABCs at the Pan Shu Zoo. Such a cute
title. Very good. If I wasn't driving, I would clap right now.
I know. I can't believe I got all that out. So tell us about this book.
Well, it's the second book in the series, which is the Far Ful Fulong from Oolong Pan Shu series. And I'm just so excited to continue, you know, everything that we're doing. I mean, what really started off as wanting to get kids excited about reading and excited about being creative and thinking outside of the box has really evolved into just a much, much bigger thing. And we're really excited about it.
And this character of Far Ful Fulong, this was inspired by your own son. Is that right?
Yeah, actually, you know, we actually moved here for the first time in 2005 after doing a film, our second film here, Lonely Hearts. And I came in, we were on Amelia Island, which we loved out there, which is complete opposite of Los Angeles. You know what I mean?
In every way, exactly.
So I came in one day, I was actually out doing yard work, you know, and I came inside and my then, two-year-old son, Nikki, was drawing this cute little furry alien character with my wife, and it was just so cute. You know, as a parent, you know, you're gushing over it, and you're just like, oh my God, how'd you come up with it, and you know, all that good stuff. And I went to bed with this adorable furry alien character with tennis shoes that night in my head, and I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I had his name, Far Ful Fulong, of course, right? And then I started thinking of the hair. I was thinking of shampoo. Shampoo was flipping in my head to Pan Shu. And I knew if I didn't get up and write this down, there's no way I'm going to remember it in the morning. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, I got up and I wrote the title, Far Ful Fulong from Oolong Pan Shu and the Gray Bubble Goo. And I started writing it. And at 6 o'clock in the morning, it was done. I never changed a word. It's exactly
how it
came out of me.
That's amazing. You know, it's a lot harder than it looks to write a good children's book. So kudos, Nick. And this book benefits cancer research as well. People, when they buy it, they'll be supporting that cause.
Absolutely. $1 from every purchase of every product that we have at Pan Shu, which our website is panshuworld.com. It's P-A-N-S-H-O-O. Every product a dollar goes to the V Foundation for Cancer Research. V Foundation was started by just an amazing group of people, ESPN, and it's all 100% of every donation that goes to them, every penny that goes to them, goes to cancer research. Ours specifically is geared towards pediatric cancer. And that really started when I went here. We have a live show with Farfel, and we went to Wolfson's Children's Hospital to do a show. And I just meeting these kids and talking to these kids and seeing the families and what they're going through and everything, it just really flipped a switch with me. And I thought, you know, we can do so much more than just the literacy aspect and just getting kids excited about reading and thinking outside the box. We can really add this other component. And, Pauline Gary got involved, and now she's part of the company, and she's just tremendous and has brought that to the table. And it's just an amazing thing to make such a difference, you know?
Sure. And it's neat to see you doing this project. Of course, people have known for years how you've been a stunt double for John Travolta on more than a dozen films, some big movies, Hairspray, Wild Hogs, Lonely Hearts, From Paris with Love, and Face Off. And so you did that for a long time, and now you're doing some other cool stuff too.
21 years with John and 26 films. So it's been a great run. I'm still working with him. As he gets a little older, the stunts become a little less. So now I'm taking on more roles in the films. Mm-hmm. I play a character in Moose, which we just finished in Alabama. Actually, I have reshoots in L.A. next week. And then we've got a project coming up with Morgan Freeman and Forrest Whitaker up in Savannah end of April. So, you know, that's still going. My heart is really in Panshu. It's really in making this difference with these kids and this work that we're doing with the V Foundation. And it's exciting because now, you know, some of my celebrity friends are, you know, just seeing what's going on and really getting behind everything that we're doing as well.
That's fantastic. It's the latest in the Panshu book series. Pick it up now online or at your local bookstore. Actor and author and children's activist Nick Loren, a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us. Come back and visit us again sometime.
Absolutely. Thank you, Melissa. Good talking to you.
You too. Have a great day. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. 1A is up next, and if you're listening to our rebroadcast, stay tuned for music. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. See you then, and have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.